is right in order to ensure that everybody will get equal attention from God. And yet verse 13 plainly tells us that's not the case. God made this choice before these men even existed. And he did so based on his own sovereign design. This is to us unjust. Because we don't do that, therefore God shouldn't do that. It doesn't seem to allow either man the opportunity to prove himself or to make a choice. So Paul answers this in verse 14 by saying, God forbid, or by no means, not at all, absolutely not. What is he answering? Is there unrighteousness with God? No. This is a very strong negation. The two terms can't go together. God and unjust. They don't work. If there is a God, small g, that is unjust, it's not the true God, because the true God is not unjust. Scripture reveals the nature of God, and his nature is holy, it is pure, it is just. To claim that there is injustice with God would be similar to saying water is dry, or the sun is dark. This is an incongruity. On the other hand, because righteousness is God's nature, it's essentially unnecessary to prove that God is righteous. Like trying to prove that the sun is light. I don't have to tell you. You know that. But looking at the statement of verse 13 about loving and hating, it would seem that there is something that's not righteous about them. We see unfairness, favoritism, partiality. Therefore, the natural reaction is, if this is true of God, then God must be unjust. And yet, there is no believer that can continue down that road. We might think that. That might be our first reaction. Oh, we can't do that. But we don't go much further than that. We say, well, I don't like that sort of reasoning. It doesn't fit. And you're right. As soon as the thought enters our mind, we automatically conclude with Scripture, no, it cannot be. There are good reasons to oppose it. But what is righteousness? Righteousness is not based on our assessment of anything. It's established by God, and it's based on his character. So God can't be unrighteous. Secondly, God has already done everything that is necessary to show the entire world that he loves us all. And simply because God tells us that he it doubles down on what God has already said, and it shows great power, and it elevates God and his absolute authority. The context of Exodus 33:19 is not on Jacob and Esau. This time it's on Moses. God is talking to Moses. This tells us that Paul's argument regarding God's choice to show mercy is not limited to just one instance. It happened with Moses. Moses said, "Lord, you're going to go with us into the promised land, right?" And the Lord said, "I'll not go, but I'll send you along the way." And Moses says, "Well, you have to go." Separated us from him. It has brought us into a state of condemnation. The wrath of God, Romans 1 says, is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. So, whereas the wages of sin is death, then man, who is a sinner, is already dead, Ephesians 2:1, and is currently, John 3:18, in the process of condemnation. That's where we all are when we're born. To allow condemnation to continue is fair. It is just. Even more than fair, it's just. Man has no claims on God. As sinners, we've lost all of our rights. So to reverse our doom would be unjust. Or it would be merciful. We can't get out of our condemned state by doing anything, or by proving ourselves, or by making a good future effort. I can make all the promises in the world to God, and that has no bearing on anything. I can put the greatest show my whole life to God, and it means nothing. Don't necessarily get mercy because it's such a good day. Don't get mercy. If I'm to be released from a certain condemnation, it has to be by God's mercy. And God's mercy is not something that I'm going to take by personal. mercy, it is because God chooses to give it. And that's all. Where does the mercy originate? God. Not God and me, not me, but just God. This must be the case. Otherwise, human efforts are the source of salvation. And throughout this whole book so far, he's been proving it has nothing to do with works. We are cleared by God's decision. We are given mercy by God's choice. Now let's go to the second of two scriptures in verse 17, where he says this, "For the scripture said to Pharaoh," there's another illustration. Now it's not Moses, now it's Pharaoh. "Even for the same purpose have I raised you up, that I might show my power in you, that my name might be declared throughout all the earth." So in contrast to the mercy that God showed to Moses, and he did give him mercy, obviously, by going with him into the through the wilderness and into the promised land, God does not give mercy to Pharaoh. Driving home the divine prerogative even further than this verse explains that Scripture, this was found in Exodus chapter 9, verse 16, Scripture declares God's choice against Pharaoh. This is, again, what doesn't sit well with us. Moses asked for it. God says, it's not up to you. But he gave it to him. He said, oh, good. Now, Pharaoh, God, he's not asking God for anything. But God is just coming right out and saying, it's not going to work for you. For this same purpose, for this and for no other purpose, God says, Pharaoh may think that he was in the position that he was in because of his heritage or power or prowess or something like that, but God reveals, you are Pharaoh because I put you there as Pharaoh, and I did so for a twofold divine purpose. Take a look at it in verse 17. To display God's power in him, and so that God's name might be proclaimed among the nations. And it's worth noting that God's name is still proclaimed worldwide over the events that took place in Pharaoh's day. We still talk about the plagues of Egypt. God also hardened Pharaoh's heart so that God's great work could be accomplished. By using Pharaoh this way, what that would do is it would provide salvation to others. A strange combination of God's work. responsibility is it to get to heaven?